Okay, so with the franchise now, it's already, you know, well established and stuff. How exactly do you go about expanding the franchise, especially going into sci-fi for the first time?
That's a good question. I think the thing with Sean is that, you know, we love telling lots of different stories with him. You know, we're always looking for different stories and different ideas to try out. And the first film was really about trying to work out whether we could tell a film with no dialogue. You know, can you keep a story going for 70, 80 minutes and keep people interested? And we think we did that. And so this time it was like, all right, what genre, what kind of area can we get into that we've never, you know, tried at Arden before? Mm-hmm. And sci-fi just felt like it was going to be the right thing. And it felt like a great world to get Sean into.
Welcome to The Anglophiles, a podcast where two Americans talk about British movies and TV. I'm Sheldon.
I'm Danny.
And I am loving almost being a human again. We get our vaccine soon.
Yeah, we're about to get our second...
Number two.
...vaccine shot. Yeah, that's really exciting. That means we'll be able to pretty safely go out and about into the world.
And yeah, we've been planning travel plans, like figuring out what we're doing with our families this summer and this fall. Like it, all stuff that of course seems normal is so foreign right now, where you're just like, wait, but we don't do that. That's not what we do anymore.
We've just gone a year without plans.
Do it.
So yeah, it'll be nice. Yeah. It'll be nice. I think we should take it easy and also try to be safe still, but
I think that's going to be the next big thing is is figuring out the boundaries that people have. Like, I think I will be happy to go to the beach, go outdoors, like go on hikes, go to parks, but stuff like indoors is going to be a whole new ball game. Like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe especially the movie theaters. I love movies.
Because I have heard that there are a few like weird strains of COVID in the world that are...
But as far as I've heard, none of them are, like, resistant to the vaccines that are already out there, right?
Okay.
Like, I hear there are a lot of strains, but I don't think... I don't know.
Well, we'll see.
we shall.
But that's pretty much what's been going on with us.
Yeah,
absolutely. What else? What else big has happened? Oh, Prince Philip has passed away.
Yes. And it was announced in a number of unique ways. I don't remember the radio station, but there's a British drum and bass station that just like dropped it in between two songs. And it's kind of legendary.
Honestly. Like that was the only amount of time they were going to dedicate to it.
Yeah. But then it is one of those things where it's a celebrity death. Like, how much time is a music radio station supposed to devote to it?
Yeah.
Like, it is one of those things where you're like, his death had weight and his life had weight. But also, like, everyone was talking about it that day.
I've seen mixed reactions online.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. People were kind of talking, remembering him. But I did see an article that was just a list of things that he said to people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's real bad.
They were not good things.
No.
It was very interesting. And it was over the years, too. It was, like, ranging from the 60s on. Just different things that he said to politicians, to celebrities.
And stuff that probably at the time was maybe more socially acceptable to say.
Yep.
Or because of the position and power he has versus where we are as a society now. Like, things get viewed differently.
Yeah.
However, I don't want to paint him in a bright light. There was a lot of negativity around that man. But I also think there was a lot of good, too. So I don't want to, like, completely...
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not
but
a...
It's...
I don't celebrate anyone's death. But did you read the thing about how Kate Blanchett went and had... She went to a luncheon with the Queen. And he asked her if she could tell him how to work his DVD player. Because he said, oh, I hear you're an actor. I have a DVD player. How do you work it?
Wow.
As if to his mind, oh, you're an actor, so you know how to work entertainment technology.
Put movies onto DVD players.
It's just really interesting. And she was like, did I just get invited here to tell him how to plug in his DVD player?
Yes you did, Kate.
But yeah, that was interesting.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, good times, good times.
I have a little piece of news as well.
Okay.
This is like, I mean, it's news in the fact that like we finally got images of something that was promised like a couple of years ago. So in 2019, they announced that Alan Turing was going to be on the 50-pound note.
Oh, yeah.
And just last week or a couple of weeks ago, they unveiled what the new 50-pound note looks like. And here, I'll
and
show
he's
it
on
to
it?
You. Yeah, and he's on
wow.
it. I mean, it looks beautiful, but it also, all of the modern 50-pound, or all of the modern bills that get made by
yeah.
any country that are still paper-based
yeah.
are so cartoonish.
Mm, yeah.
And I feel like as we are moving away from paper banknotes, it's a weird move, but it's beautiful. It's a good, I like the design.
I saw The Imitation Game when it came out, so that was some years ago now.
He is a famous mathematician and computer science pioneer.
Yes.
During World War II, he helped the Allies win
yes.
because of code breaking.
Yes.
Like he's one of the smartest people that's ever lived in terms of like solving codes.
Oh,
his mind,
okay. And the like, Turing test is named after him.
Exactly.
Okay, that's what I was thinking when I was thinking about AI. Okay.
Yeah. And
got
so
it.
The banknote has a bunch of like clever visual references to his work.
Mm.
And now that I am reading it, it actually will not be made of paper. It's made of a polymer, which is longer lasting and harder to counterfeit.
Hmm.
And just, I mean, Alan Turing, another thing that a lot of people don't know about him, he was a gay man. And that is something that doesn't always get celebrated in the works of like science and mathematicians. Like, I think a lot of times people get overshadowed. So it's a big deal in a number of ways to like celebrate this man. And it's going to enter circulation on June 23rd, which is his birthday.
Mm.
So in about 2 months, you'll have a new 50-pound note, Britton.
Woohoo!
That's cool.
Very cool. That is good news.
Yeah.
I do remember hearing about that a while ago. So I do have an email from a listener.
Oh, I
love
it.
It was sent a while ago. This is from Michelle Toole, I think. How it's pronounced. Okay, the subject is Last of the Summer Wine. Michelle writes, "Hi Danny and Sheldon, loving the pod, have done for a long time. You two are so great and I appreciate your fondness for all things British." Mm-hmm. Speaking of, and I think I've heard you mention that someone else had recommended this to you, but you have to check out Last of the Summer Wine. It's set in the picturesque Holmfirth/Huddersfield area. And is just beautiful. The characters range from middle-aged to elderly senior citizens, and every one of them will make their way into your hearts, even
Great.
The curmudgeonly ones.
Those are the best ones.
Those are your favorite
Those
ones.
Are my fave.
It's funny, yet heartwarming, and yes, a few early scenes are a bit eye-rolly, the trope of the nagging wife and the put-upon husband, but that
sure.
eases up. It's one of my top five favorite British shows of all time, and I think you'll see why. Much love from Northern Cali, Michelle Toole. I actually have watched Last of the Summer Wine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was a... I talk about this a lot in this podcast, but I used to watch The Vicar of Dibley a lot with my mom.
Yeah.
On our public access channel on TV.
Mm.
Maybe at 10 o'clock at night, there was this block of British shows that they would play. And it was Last of the Summer Wine, The Vicar of Dibley, Waiting for God, and Keeping Up Appearances.
Mm.
And so I think my mom and I were most interested in watching The Vicar of Dibley, so we would
Good
always
choice.
Carve out time to watch that one.
Yeah.
But every now and then I would stick around and watch Last of the Summer One. So I haven't seen a ton of episodes, so it is definitely something we should watch, because
yeah.
I do remember it being really good.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I mean, like I said, I love curmudgeons.
Yeah. They're so grumpy. It's really good.
They're so grumpy.
They're so grumpy.
And to your point, that some of the scenes may be a little eye-rolly. I think tropes are tropes for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we see things, and I think we watch things from the past, and we're like, oh, this has been done 1,000 times. But not at that time it hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are some things that, like, I feel like historical shows are important to watch with that kind of a lens. Like, it doesn't forgive dialogue for being eye-rolly or for being, like, a little misogynistic. But I think there are times where you go, oh, this is kind of where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be this show, but it's this era, this type of writing.
It's true.
And that alone is worth watching.
Do you know what else is worth watching?
What's that?
Our topic for this week.
Ooh-wee.
Which is... so the full title is
yes.
A Shaun the Sheep Movie, Farmageddon.
Yep.
That's the full title.
Title.
Yeah, so we watched the latest Shaun the Sheep movie. This is a sequel. It's technically a sequel to the 2015 Shaun the Sheep movie.
Yeah.
Although it is a standalone story. Yeah. You don't have to have seen the first movie to watch this.
Yeah, mainly the way Aardman Productions works, they don't really do sequels. As far as I know, this is their only sequel they've ever done.
Mm.
But like you say, you don't need to have seen the other ones because the story is standalone. Like, yeah. It's kind of a sequel.
And the great thing about Shaun the Sheep is you could literally watch either movie or any Shaun the Sheep episode without ever having seen any of it.
Yeah.
Because,
and still get what's going on.
Yeah. It's very easy to understand. But yeah, so we watched it. It came out in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Netflix right now. I guess Netflix got the rights to it.
Sure.
So yeah, if you have Netflix, it's available.
It's also nominated for the 2020 Academy Awards.
It is.
Meaning,
it is animated. It's one of the best animated features.
Which means this is the second movie in a row we're doing that's going to be nominated in the Academy Awards.
It's true.
Like, represent England.
We watched,
your animation is killing it this year.
We watched Wolfwalkers and we watched this.
Like, legitimately, this is always a tough category, mm-hmm. and usually one that, like, Pixar, Disney has, like, on lock. But, like, this year, Soul and Onward are maybe not as good as Disney and Pixar generally put out. And I'm not dissing them. They're great movies.
I think Onward is the best.
I love Onward, but it's also because we love Dungeons and Dragons. And,
yeah.
And there's a lot of, like, rock references in there.
I really liked Onward.
I think if there's a year that something like a Shaun the Sheep or a Wolfwalkers could win, this is a good year for it.
I kind of hope out of everything that's not, and this is the first year that I've seen every single animated film in the category. I think out of this group, I really want Wolfwalkers to win. As much as I love Onward, as much as I love this Shaun the Sheep movie.
It's just such an accomplishment, like an achievement in, like, really beautiful, innovative animation.
Yep.
The story, like, I know I talked on the last episode that I may have picked it to death a little bit, but it is something special. It really is.
It's so good. And it's historical. I don't know. I just feel like it's great Oscar. It's like, what do they call Oscar bait?
Yeah. And it kind of is. But then on the other end, this movie does not at all feel like an Oscar movie. Just based on, like, how much you're laughing throughout.
It's
like,
true.
It's a straight comedy.
It's very light. It's very fun.
It's a family movie, which...
But
what?
I was just going to say, it's very light and fun. It's not heavy, but I think what does make it Oscar worthy is their animation.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
They do stop motion.
Yeah. It's stop motion that has been enhanced with computer
digitally.
Graphics, but you can still very much tell. I think in a lot of times where Lula is talking, or Tula, I forget the alien character's name. Whenever she is talking, like, the stuff around her mouth is kind of moving a little bit. Like, you can tell that, like, thumbs have molded.
You can see thumbprints on their faces.
Yeah.
I just love seeing that in Aardman films because, like, it just reminds you that, like, somebody made this.
And I think
with their hands.
And I think this is the difference between, like, what I was saying last time about still seeing the lines as an artistic choice.
Yeah.
This isn't an artistic choice as much as, like you're saying, this is like blood, sweat, and tears. They built this and we're seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing a thumbprint is almost like you're peeking in and watching the process happen.
Yeah.
Like, that you're imagining them kind of moving everything around.
Yeah.
And you get a sense of just how big this must have been. Like, to do stop motion of one character is insane.
Yeah.
But, like, a dozen sheep?
Yeah, it's true. I also really do think that Aardman does something really amazing with the Shaun the Sheep, both the show and the movies, that, you know, they don't do in Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit and Pirate Band of Misfits. And that is that there is no dialogue.
Yeah, none at all.
There's no speaking. Nobody says any words. And the fact that they are able to convey everything they need to just through expressions and noises and signs is really, really clever.
And, I mean, pantomime is an ancient art form. Like, that we've told stories through pantomime for a long time. And, like, silent films were told with, like, text in between. I think, like, it's a staple of filmmaking and of art that we just don't see much.
Yeah.
And when it's done so well like this, you kind of forget that there's no dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, you might notice initially whenever, like, Sean's not talking and interacting with the other sheep, you might be aware.
Yeah. But you fall into it really quickly. That's one thing I loved when I discovered the show Shaun the Sheep and I started watching it. It took me a while to realize, like, I was watching an episode and it started playing and I was like, nobody's talking. And then it like went the whole episode and I was like, oh, this show doesn't do talking.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I just really love it. So.
I mean, and I think because of that, it opens itself up to a number of jokes that you wouldn't think are possible because of a restriction mm-hmm. of not having dialogue. I think it makes you have to be more creative with what other jokes can we put in the background? What can we do? We know the audience is paying attention. They're looking right now. Mm-hmm. They're not listening for something. So what visually can we do? And I think like the visual gags are out of control in this movie. They're everywhere. Every single scene, like important things are happening. And then you'll glance back and just be like, that is the most ridiculous thing to just drop in the background.
Wow. Yeah. Let's talk about the premise a little bit.
Sure. Yeah.
So, if you know the Shaun the Sheep show, if you know the first movie, it is about, a sheep, Sean,
yep.
who lives with a bunch of other sheep on, I think it's called Mossy Bottom Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the farmer, there's the sheepdog, Bitzer. There's a Bitzer. Bunch of different sheep. There are the pigs. There's the different farmer.
The
there's the rooster. Oh, the pigs are jerks.
They get their comeuppance.
There's the bull. There's a bunch of like farm animals that always like, you know, make appearances. Yeah. But in this movie, an alien ship crash lands in their town.
Yeah, in the forest.
An alien makes its way to the farm, and Sean not only befriends the alien, but also helps the alien get home.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a tale as old as time. You know, it's like E.T. It's like, we have all of these stories. Like, we know how this is going to play out when it starts. but they take that premise and then make it the most delightful, hour and a half.
Because it's, you're so right that it's like, it's a premise we've seen a bunch. And like we were saying in the listener email, that doesn't always mean it's a bad thing to have tropes that mm-hmm. you've seen before.
Yep.
Instead, like, you can play on them and lean on them, knowing the audience is expecting this to be like E.T. You can lean in on that and get some jokes out of it, as well as emotional moments that might be easy to accomplish because the audience already feels that way
yeah.
based on prior movies.
Yeah.
Like, it is really unique. And then to add on top of it, this alien is being rescued by a sheep. Like, it's not a human or a child. Like, it's an animal that should not be in this situation.
I think they did also a really good job with playing into the role of, like, a farm in... I don't know, like alien culture, UFO culture.
Yeah.
Because it always seems like it's people out in the country that see aliens and claim to have been abducted. And then crop circles are huge, but they mainly happen in crops.
Yeah.
So it's just really interesting that the everything within this premise, they really explored.
Yeah, they really do. And showing that, like, people get excited by, like, whenever there's a giant group of people coming to town for anything, whether it's an event or something like this where, like, aliens are spotted, like, people see the dollar signs of, like, how can I grift all of these tourists that are coming in?
Yeah.
And the farmer is no different. Like,
it's
because
true.
Because of the alien and because of Sean, his giant, like, wheat harvester is destroyed. And so he is out to make a ton of money from all of the alien tourists.
Yep.
And so, like, he transforms the farm into the title of the movie.
Farmageddon. Yeah, I love that the farmer went crazy. There's a scene when Bitzer goes down into the basement, and then there's this, like, kind of eerie music playing.
Yeah.
And then you see, like, where the farmer has, like, cut out newspaper articles and put them on the walls. And he's gone crazy with this idea that, like, he's going to make a bunch of money. And you're like, oh, okay, the farmer wants to make a bunch of money. But then he points to the picture of the wheat chopper 5000.
And then you get it, yeah.
Like, oh, he's doing all this so he can get the biggest, best, most awesome farm. farm equipment. Yeah, it's really good. It was also really good to see all the sheep characters again.
Yeah.
Because Sean is the main sheep. He's the most important sheep. He's the smartest one. He's oddly human compared to the rest of the sheep, you know?
I mean, he walks on two legs when most of them stay on four.
He understands human technology. Like, he understands. He's just smarter.
Yeah.
I think I've talked about this before, but I've always kind of thought Sean was an alien that looks like a sheep living with sheep. That was like kind of my fan theory.
Yeah. So when this movie started, I think I even said to you, because like the first you see of the alien, it's all covered in shadow.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they make its little arm look, it looks identical to the sheep arms.
Yeah.
And you later find out that's not what the alien looks like.
Yeah.
But part of me was like, this is going to be like Muppets from Space, where we find out Gonzo's an alien the whole time and Sean's been an alien living and this is actually his family.
So we didn't talk about that while we were watching
the
movie.
I was thinking that when it started.
I'm glad that we were both kind of thinking that, because like I've always wondered, like, why is Sean so different like mentally from the other sheep, but also he has that little puff of hair on his head.
Yeah, and they don't.
And I'm sure that was like an animation.
Just artistic choice they to were like, tell him apart.
Yeah, they were like, we need our main character to stand out. But that's my going fan theory, is that Sean is an alien too.
Yeah. He might be an alien, but we know he's not from the planet that Tula Lula is from. What is her name? Tula? I think it's Tula.
I don't know.
I think she says her name a bunch. She says
I thought she was saying the name of her planet. But
I could never tell.
Yeah. She kept going,
that's the only downside of no dialogue.
Yeah, so the movie kind of starts out with all the sheep. They keep trying to do something fun, like order pizza, or like they're trying to do like fun stuff around the farm, and Bitzer keeps...
He is having none of
he
it.
He keeps outlawing everything that they want to do
police.
That's fun. So it's kind of funny that like at a time when they're trying to entertain themselves, like that's when something out of this world like comes into their farm. But yeah, so I love the alien design.
Yeah, it's really
she's
neat.
She's so cute.
Yeah.
She's like furry, but she's got dog ears, kind of. But
yeah,
they can raise up and make antenna. Like, it's
she can
really...
She change colors a little bit.
And she has those arms that'll come out of the fur.
Yeah, for the most part, it looks like she's wearing a very, like, 70s fringy dress that has a bunch of layers or something, you know, whatever those are called, but then like she'll have little arms that come out from underneath them whenever she needs them.
It's
a cute little alien design, and I think it is a good move whenever we find out at one part in the movie, like when we find out that we're trying to get her back home, that she's been separated from her parents, that this was on accident, that she got stranded here, like she was also just trying to entertain herself, trying to have fun and play around, and accidentally launched herself here. And so I think we immediately feel for this alien of being like, oh, we've all made that kind of a mistake when we were young. Like,
oh, yeah. You walk away from your parent at the store and then you get lost. And it's the scariest thing that's ever happened to you.
And imagine if you just like got into your parents' car in the garage, pushed a button, and then woke up in Norway. Like, that's essentially what happened, where it's just like, whoa, I'm not from here. Everyone here looks and speaks differently than me. This is hard.
Your best hope is that somebody kind and smart, like Sean, finds you.
And can get you home.
And takes it upon themselves to... Let's talk about the man and his dog who saw the spaceship.
Or as I call him, Mr. Chips.
Mr. Chips. Because the ship lands kind of in the woods outside of town. And there's a man who has just left the Chippy. And he's got like a bunch of chips. Fries in wrapped up in paper, and he's walking with his dog, and he sees the ship, and then like the door opens and the alien is like standing there, and he's so freaked out, and he starts running away, but he drops his chips, and the dog starts running, so the dog's freaked out, and then he has to like look down, and he's like, do I want to run and save my life, or do I want to stop and try to grab the chips? Like, this man was so devoted to his chips, and as a person who loves french fries, I totally understand it. I totally get it. I would be like, I would hesitate. I would.
He did. He hesitated, and then he left. And then he came back and grabbed one, which I love.
Yeah, but it's hot, and he was blowing at me.
But then what was even better was whenever later he sees that they kept the chips in like evidence, yeah, whatever they were like gathering. Yep. Would you go back for them then? Is
no.
that
no. okay? They'd yeah. be cold. Like yeah. once they cool down, they're less valuable.
They're less valuable.
They're less exciting.
Chips have value.
But yeah, that was a great, and the design of that man with his hair, his gray hair, and his
good mustache.
His mustache, that was great.
There's something about like a stop motion character with a mustache. I
so
love it.
Good. So good. There were some good mustaches and beards in Pirates Band of Misfits. Yeah.
Oh, but we haven't even talked about another phenomenal character in this movie.
What?
The government agent.
Oh, yeah.
I think she is fantastic. I love the villains in these Aardman movies because immediately you're like, yep, hate this person.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even have to. But they're also human, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, her want, like, her desire
yep.
is so human of getting that villain backstory of being it's like, yeah, true. People laughed at you. I get
you think,
being mad.
Oh, she's evil. She just wants to capture the alien, probably run tests on it, the same old thing.
Yeah.
But they do give her the backstory of she saw aliens, the same aliens, when she was little, and she drew a picture, and the moment she tried to tell people about it, they laughed at her and
yeah,
ridiculed
no
her.
One believed.
So that, when they did that backstory, it instantly raised the stakes in the story for her.
Yeah.
Because you were like, she's not just doing this because it's her job that she gets paid to do. This is her life. Like, she's trying to validate
yeah.
her life and her claim as a child that aliens existed. Like, it's not deep, but it is,
but it is.
Deep, you know?
It And it That's humanizes
good story.
Her.
Yeah,
yeah, she's not just a faceless government agent
it's
with
great.
Sunglasses.
It's great like, storytelling.
And it's something where I think a lot of times screenwriters will only have their villain exist to stop the hero.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but every single person has wants and desires and a
yeah.
life of their own, and they're doing their own thing every other day. Like, Shaun the Sheep interacted one day out of this woman's entire life.
Yeah.
So, like, we seeing the rest of it helps fill in those gaps so much.
Yeah.
And man, whenever, like, there's a great turn at the end, and she literally goes, like, full RoboCop turning that car into like a transformer.
Yeah, that was wild. It was really great though.
Oh.
And it had like by the time that happened in the movie, you were like, yep, I believe that your
yep.
van
can
turn
that.
Into a mech suit.
Absolutely it can.
Let's also talk about the little robot character. She has
oh my god, how yeah, have we not talked
I think
about
his
him?
Name was Muggins. It was
Muggg-i5. Yeah.
Or I something like that. It looked like his name was Muggins. And he looks a lot like Wally. And
he definitely looks like a nod to several robots.
Yeah, Wally, Johnny-5.
Yeah. A little bit of like I don't know. There's a bunch of robots that I'm seeing. But yeah, like a bunch
yeah.
of famous sci-fi robots.
And he, yeah, he's kind of like working with that, with her, and like, he's filing evidence. So every time they'll come across evidence, he like takes it out and puts it in a plastic bag and puts it in his filing cabinet
yeah.
that's in his chest.
Which is so cute.
That
I
robot
love it.
Character was really good. And,
yeah.
and it makes sense. Like, Aardman is so good at making these characters be so expressive without words. That making the robot have feelings was just,
yeah.
you know, they did it so easily.
And because that's normally a character that you're like, okay, a villain who's like big and bad and scary, they need a sidekick. Every villain has a sidekick. And usually it's a character that like the villain yells at or, you know, like we feel bad for them instead.
Yeah.
But to have like a robot doing its best and like not always succeeding is really funny because I mean, robots and computers are supposed to be smart. They're supposed to be intelligent. We fear them in Terminator. Like,
yeah.
But this robot will not take over the world. Like,
he was really cute.
Yeah.
I do also love how when the bad guy, she's like hanging from the thing up in the sky, like the sign, and she falls. And she's inside the giant mech suit that weighs.
Yeah, the giant car.
It weighs like a ton, and it's falling. And he just like looks up and just
this teeny robot.
He goes under it and holds his arms out under
like,
it, like
you're gonna
I'll
do
catch
something.
You. And it just
smashes them good.
It was just really funny. I also love when they capture the spaceship. They take it to their lab, and then Bitzer's inside because Bitzer accidentally went in there.
Because of course he did.
And he came out, and he's wearing that helmet that the farmer had him put on. And everyone thinks he's an alien.
Which
and
is
so
amazing.
When the door opens and he's sitting there and everyone just like stops what they're doing and they're terrified because they think he's an alien, and the robot sees him and he poops out a pile of paper.
Yeah, I'm like, oh.
He poops out paper. I'm scared. It was really good.
I felt bad for Bitzer the whole movie. Like, I felt really bad for him for once.
I felt a little bit bad for him, but they did a really good job of making him... At the beginning, he was so insufferable. He was being such a jerk to the sheep that it was like, okay, you're kind of like getting your due right now.
That's his job, though. He's got to keep him in line.
He goes overboard.
Yeah.
He really does.
Yeah, like, but if he didn't go overboard, I don't know. I don't know. I was going to say Sean wouldn't have blown up the thresher, but he might have anyway.
It's true. There were some really good parts in here. So what did you think overall of the movie? What did you think of it compared to the first one?
Man, I mean, I think the first one seemed like a more Shaun the Sheep adventure. And this was like, this was a cool animated, like, we're getting an alien back to its home movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that Shaun the Sheep was also in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was very, very funny. I thought this one, like, from start to finish, once the alien and Shaun interact with each other,
yeah,
it does not slow down. It's so fast fun and, like, you can barely breathe. Like, it's going so quick, you're laughing so hard. But I think the first one feels more like maybe the TV series does. But I don't think it's a bad thing that it's different.
No, it's wonderful.
But that's kind of how I feel, yeah.
Agree with you that, yeah, this one was a little more into genre. Like, this one was like a sci-fi.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it really is just... Like, the first one was so good to me.
The first one was more Babe, Pig in the City.
Well, yeah, and it captured everything from the show and just made it, like, more adventurous.
Yeah.
I do think that the first Shaun the Sheep movie... Like, I adored this one.
Definitely.
I do think... I love the first one maybe a little bit more because of the sheer emotions that they play upon in it. Like, I ugly cried at the first Shaun the Sheep movie when they...
You're going to cry again.
I'm going to cry, but just like when Shaun finally found the farmer, but the farmer had amnesia. And so he's trying to come up to the farmer and the farmer's like, get away. And Shaun has to like run away like a sad dog. And the first movie touches my emotions so deeply.
Yeah.
So because of that, I think the first one I prefer. But this one is also so wonderful.
Yeah.
Like, really great follow-up to that first movie.
I think this one might be funnier.
I agree with you. I think this one has more jokes per minute.
Yeah.
And it is funny. We were laughing. We were dying.
Like, a lot. We were laughing a lot. I was not expecting to laugh as much as we did.
Everything was landing for us. I don't know if anyone listening has already watched it or is about to watch it because we're covering it, but I don't know. The jokes were just working for us.
It's fun.
So were there any characters that showed up in this that you were really excited to see? Any characters from the show in the first movie?
I mean, no, I don't think I get as excited for the specific characters as much as you do. I think, like, I like seeing all of the different sheep do a different thing. So seeing each of them get their, like, kind of 15 seconds was great.
Yeah.
And then I just love the farmer. I love the way humans talk in this movie.
Yeah.
So, like, anytime the farmer is doing anything, I'm loving it.
Yeah, no, he's so
good.
I'm
glad that he got a lot of screen time.
I was very excited to see all of the farm characters because, you know, there are full-on episodes of Shaun the Sheep that feature around certain characters, and it was nice to see them. Like, they had the bull, the gigantic bull that lives on the farm. Like, he showed up in the movie. He got, like, teleported onto the alien ship, and they suddenly,
That was scary.
realized, oh my gosh, he's in here with us. And so they teleported him back down, but they were moving, so instead of landing on the farm, he landed in a china shop. So he was a bull in a china shop.
Yep.
That was great. The rooster made an appearance, always drinking coffee, and then doing his morning crowing.
Mm.
The pigs were there.
Yep, they got painted green.
They didn't have a huge role, but yeah, the farmer made them be aliens. That was great. It was also good to see the sheep that we know. Like, Shaun, of course, is going to show up, but Shirley, the gigantic sheep.
Yep, who is your favorite, right?
Timmy's my favorite.
Oh, okay.
Timmy is the little baby sheep, and his mom is always, you know, watching out for him. But it was good to see those characters because I do love them.
Yeah. They were really great. I mean, like, it's amazing how well fleshed out all of the characters are that you can just look at one of them, their size, and be like, oh, right, that's Timmy. He behaves in this way.
Yeah.
Which is such a testament to the show and the animation where they really understand each of these characters. And it probably comes from physically holding and moving them around. Mm-hmm. You probably get an idea too of like, oh, what can we do? With something like Shirley, you're like, there is a lot of mass here with the like sheep fluff.
Yeah.
So it would be funny if a character jumped inside and then like poked her head out the top. That would be very
That's
funny.
An ongoing joke with Shirley is that things can get lost inside Shirley's wool.
Yeah.
Because she's so big. I didn't know Shirley was a lady sheep for a long time.
Ah.
Because she's voiced by a man with a very low voice.
Uh-huh.
God, I love Shirley. So are you ready for tea time?
Oh, I could do some tea time.
Let's take a quick tea time and then we'll come back to a Shaun the Sheep movie, Farmageddon.
Shaun the Sheep.
Okay, welcome to tea time. This is the part of the podcast where we try a treat or a snack from England. So, what are we trying today?
Today, well, we're trying a couple of snacks because we're going to try some pick and mix.
Yes. So, this is actually great timing because, as you know, in some of our last episodes, our listener, Julie, has sent us a large box
great care package.
English treats and biscuits and candy from Waitrose?
Yes.
So,
and we've already dove into some of them.
We've tried some of them.
Yeah.
Two of them, she noted, are things that you can get in the pick and mix, which is, for Americans that don't know, that's the wall of, you know, plastic bins full of candy, and you just,
you know, combine all
you
together.
You just put
in
scoops
one bag
of it into a bag or a container, and you get a bunch of candy. And so, yeah, so she made sure that we knew that two of them were things that you can get in the pick and mix. So
yeah, and in this movie, Shaun and Lula go into a candy store.
Okay, the grocery store scene in this movie,
it was ridiculous.
Is so good. It's so good. And so, yeah, it was wonderful. There were so many jokes. But yeah, the alien goes crazy. And when she sees the pick and mix, she goes crazy. And she eats a bunch of candy. And then she burps. And it's really loud. And they hear it in Africa.
Yeah.
And that's what alerts the government to knowing that there's aliens.
There's an alien here. She burped and made earthquakes happen.
But yes, so the pick and mix scene. And that's when I saw that scene. That's when I was like, okay, we're doing our pick and mix candies. So we have two candies.
Yeah, what candies are we trying today?
One of them is, it says, Waitrose and Partners strawberry flavored laces. So these are long pieces of strawberry licorice, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and it looks like, if you've ever had kind of like pull and peel.
Twizzlers pull and peel? Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's like long, skinny pieces.
Well, I mean more like, I feel like I've had this kind of rope-like, like in more, it like next to each other. Mm. Less Twizzlers and more like this stands alone.
Okay.
And you pull it apart from others that stand alone.
We're also trying something called foam bananas and shrimps. And
which is such a sentence to just breeze over what you just said. What foam bananas and shrimps.
Foam bananas, yeah. On
candy.
The cover of the package, there's a little man in a boat fishing for shrimp. And then there is a little monkey hanging next to him. And they're smiling at each other.
I have like so much anxiety over this.
So, yeah. So I opened the package of foam bananas and shrimps. And I opened the package of strawberry laces. And in true pick and mix style, I've crammed them into a little plastic container so we can just reach in and grab out candy that we want. So
let's do it.
Okay, let me.
Is it shrimp flavored?
No.
Thank God. I was so worried.
No.
You didn't even say what the flavor was.
So
like,
I think that they just are. There's little yellow pieces that are shaped like bananas.
Uh-huh.
And then there's little pink pieces that are shaped like shrimps.
Okay. And what do they taste like?
I think they're just flavored with. I think they're just sugar flavored.
Oh, so neither of them are banana.
I don't think
there's
a flavor. I think there's just.
Let's try it.
Okay. All right. So yeah, what did you want to try first?
Well, now I really do want to try one of those.
Okay.
Let's. Yeah.
I'm gonna try a shrimp.
I'll try a banana.
Do you like it?
They're circus peanuts.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. The minute I bit into it, I realized we have something like this in America, and it's a giant orange circus peanut.
Which. It's one of those things, I think, similar to candy corn. It's so controversial. Like, you can't kind of like it. You either love it or hate it. Mm-hmm. And I think I love, like, a circus peanut.
You like the circus peanut?
I love this texture.
I think that the circus peanut is one of the most hated candies that I know of.
I like it.
It's not bad, though. It's sugary. It melts in your mouth.
It's melt in your mouth sugar. It's a good texture that changes. Like, it's a little firm, but it's also soft.
All right. Am I crazy, or does the little banana taste a little bit like banana? Does it have a little banana?
I don't think so. I think it is your brain telling you.
I like the little shrimps. They're really cute.
Yeah, the shrimps are fun. We got more bananas than shrimps, though.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of bananas in here.
I'm so confused what bananas and shrimps in a monkey and a shrimp have to do
it's
with each
fun,
other.
It's fun, you know? It's for children.
No, I get that, but, like... In the world of the candy, why are the two of them near each other? Monkeys and shrimp don't live in the same environment.
As you can see here, there is a man in the water and there's a shrimp in the water and there's a branch overhanging the water and the monkey's hanging down.
But I'm saying monkeys don't live in places where shrimps live, really.
Are you sure about that? Like, there's got to be areas, like tropical areas, where you can get shrimp out of the water that monkeys also live.
Pretty sure shrimp are like deep ocean. They're not like shoreline critters.
I think you're thinking about it too hard.
I am. Because, like, I want my candies to be, like...
To make sense?
Yes.
No, this is a cartoon world for children.
Whenever I had a pack of gummy fruit animals that were all from the ocean, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. A shark and a whale and fishes all swim together in the ocean, so I'll eat them all. Or if I had, like, a pack of animal crackers. They're all animals you could find in the zoo. I get it.
The circus.
Circus too. But like...
Okay, so you don't... So you...
I super love...
So you like the candy.
Love the candy.
But you don't like the concept of shrimp and bananas being together.
Yeah. If it's only those two things, like, add some more wacky designs in here. I'd be into that.
Okay,
Or just lean on the shrimp. The shrimp are great.
What if those are two things that often get shipped to places?
Bananas and shrimps?
Yeah. They have to ship bananas across... You know,
that's true.
The U.S. they have to shrimp. Like, it's. What if it kind of started off like one of those things? Like,
yeah. What do we got?
These
what
are the boxes too exotic. There? Like, these are too exotic foods. Shrimp and bananas. Like,
especially
bananas,
for England too.
Yeah, those things are not exotic now, but a long time ago they were.
Okay, I can get behind that. Okay. I see what you're picking up.
Yeah. Okay, let's try the strawberry laces. Okay, that was delicious.
Yeah.
What do you think of the strawberry lace?
The strawberry flavor comes through really strong.
An intense strawberry flavor.
I loved it.
Like, this is better than any Twizzlers or any licorice.
I was going to say, like, American stuff. Like, I don't like cherry flavored things like this, the pull and peel. Strawberry is good, and this was a good strawberry.
This tastes almost more like a fruit snack that you would get that's, like, full of real fruit juice.
I'm trying to think of, like, I remember having something like this as a kid, but they would come like, it would come like rolled up into like a spiral almost. And you like pull apart from the spiral.
Okay. Yeah. I kind of know what candy you're talking about. Sounds really familiar.
But it would be like on like a piece of like cardboard or something almost. And you'd kind of like pull it off both and it'd be like.
So this has strawberry fruit juice in it as well as blackcurrant.
Oh, blackcurrant. Something that doesn't get used much in American foods.
As well as a little bit of apple, pumpkin, radish, and tomato. Probably really small amounts, though. But yeah, no. I wonder if it's the blackcurrant that we're picking up. Because everything I've ever...
I think it is. I just took another bite.
Everything I've ever tasted that has blackcurrant in it just is so good.
Yeah, and it is like... Now that you've told me that I am tasting not just strawberry, that there are like kind of other fruits and... You're right. I think it is the black currant that's elevating it.
These strawberry laces.
Fantastic.
I hope this isn't recency bias, but I want to say this is one of my favorite candies that we've tried on here.
Whoa.
It's so flavorful.
It's real good. I mean, both of these
are real
good.
And it's the perfect mix of sweet and tart.
Yeah.
It's so good. These are really good, Julie.
I think, yeah, Julie, this was great. I think both of these are phenomenal choices if you've got just like a big wall of candy and you're looking to fill like a bin of pick and mix.
I would put these in.
I would put either of these.
Yeah.
This pick and mix was incredible. Waitrose, change the shrimp and banana packaging. 10 out of 10, Julie. These are great.
Wow. Well, that was a really good, that was a really interesting snack time.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Julie, for sending those. We're excited to try more. You ready to get back to the episode?
Yeah.
So, this is essentially a sci-fi film.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me is that it kind of also feels, it's kind of on the verge of being a parody sci-fi film. It's a true sci-fi film in that, you know, there is an alien character, but there are so many references to sci-fi properties in this. I started writing them down because I was like, there's another one. I was really impressed, actually. So
I would say it's less a parody and more a farce along the lines of like Airplane. That it's using all of the knowledge, like pop culture knowledge,
yes,
of sci-fi to enhance jokes rather than being a parody of the genre or of another movie.
Yeah.
So it's not like whenever they did all of the like scary movies, it's not parodying scary movies in that capacity.
Correct.
It's so I think it's more a farce, like a just a broad sci-fi farce.
I wrote down some of the ones that I picked up on, and then you said that you read there are a bunch, but
we could spend the next hour talking about all of the sci-fi references in this movie because it's incredible the amount that they're constantly throwing at you.
So,
but yeah, tell me the ones that you picked up on when you were watching. What jumped out at you?
So I kind of feel like when Sean found pieces of pizza leading back to the barn, that was a little bit like E.T.
Yeah.
Although it wasn't him leaving a trail of pizza trying to get the... Yeah. But it was like...
It was reversed,
E.T. Yeah, yeah.
Because it was the like alien led him there.
E.T. Then there were a couple of E.T. references with them flying in front of the moon, like silhouetted in front of the moon.
Yep.
We knew that was going to happen.
It had to happen.
We knew it was going to happen.
Because they kind of hinted at it earlier. Yeah. Whenever, like, I think there was one of the signs the dog had like, no jumping with a bike and somebody
no
sitting
riding
in the basket.
Bike. Close Encounters of the Third Kind is one. When they go to the
it's
car wash.
Several times, right?
I saw the one reference, and it was when they go to the car wash and the guy starts punching the buttons on which car wash they're going to run the spaceship
boom,
through.
Boom, boom.
Yeah. And then he went boop, 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 boop.
Yep.
And so that was good. There was a reference to 2001, A Space Odyssey with the toast.
That's
popping
the one
up.
I meant to say. There are four or five 2001 references.
The toast popping up out of the toaster being that monolith.
Just like the monolith.
So good. Yeah. With the music, too.
I was going to say, using the music is perfect.
There was an X-Files reference, which I was wondering if there was going to be one.
Yep.
Because it was so alien-related, and they just got a ship back at their hangar, which is so X-Files. And then when the lady walked over to like her keypad, she whistled. It was like voice recognition. She whistled the X-Files theme song.
And then one of the sheep tried to whistle it later and couldn't
Sean
do it.
Sean was trying to whistle. He was having a hard time.
Because, sheep, I guess, don't whistle.
And then the only other reference that I wrote down was there were some Doctor Who references when they go on the spaceship and they're trying to get the spaceship up and running. And the little alien starts throwing equipment around. Yeah. And one of them was a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah,
I can't remember which. It was an early one. It was the one that's like silver with red at the top.
It's got like a ball at the top, kind of a...
Kind of a circle. And so that flew by and it made the sonic screwdriver noise. And I was like, that was one of the sonic screwdrivers.
And then...
There was also when the farmer put together his like tourist trap, Farmageddon.
Yeah.
Inside, someone comes out of like a portable toilet... And it's Tom Baker with the scarf, with the hat. It's the Tom Baker doctor. And he was also coming out of a blue portable toilet, which kind of looked like a TARDIS.
And he came out at the time where the sheep were dressed as, they kind of looked like Daleks.
Oh, yes, that was another one, yeah. They put trash on themselves to try to sneak in, and they, yep, one of them looked like a Dalek. So those were all the references that I caught.
There's so many, like I said. So I won't name all of them, but here's a bunch that that I kind of found via a couple of sites this afternoon. So we kind of alluded to one earlier where, like, Lula the alien jumps inside Shirley's coat and then pops out the top as, like, a reference to Alien.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even pick up on that.
Yep.
And I'm gonna have to watch this movie again.
That's the thing, is, like, you're gonna say that to, like, every one of these.
because I'll probably remember seeing it.
Yeah. Like, the garage. Do you remember the name of the garage in this movie? Like, that as they were, like, driving up to the one that had the, like, keypad.
No.
The name of it was H.G. Wheels.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Which is a play on War of the Worlds author H.G. Wells.
The Time Machine.
And yeah, there's so many, like, blink and you'll miss it kind of stuff where whenever the barn scene happens, like you were just saying, if you look at the pizza box, the grease stain is the exact shape of the hieroglyphs from Arrival.
I was wondering if there was going to be an Arrival. Was looking.
So it was in the
specifically
farm.
For an Arrival reference.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, and then like you said, they invoke the music of Space Odyssey a couple of times in the obelisk. The supermarket that they go to is called Milliways, which is the restaurant at the end of the universe from Hitchhiker's Guide.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
I was also looking for a Hitchhiker's Guide reference everywhere, and I wasn't really seeing anything. So.
I think that might be the only one, but there's probably another one. Like I said, there's so many references.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ones that are, like, small. Like, the opening scene of this is the reverse of, like, the opening of Contact, where it's, like, the outer space, like, tracking shot, where it's, like, the opposite here. And so I think there's a lot like that where they're, like, it's not an immediate nod,
yeah,
but it is, like, if you know what's happening.
Yeah.
And there are, like, other small things, like, with the first Shaun the Sheep movie and with Pirates Band of Misfits, they have a character wearing one of the coveted Blue Peter badges,
mm-hmm,
that I think we talked about, that, like, that they award to long-running BBC children's show, the Blue Peter,
yeah,
to viewers for actions of outstanding merit. And so an astronaut is wearing it in this movie, which is great. I mean, the invisible spaceship is, like, in so many movies. Notably, this website said Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, had a cloaked Klingon spaceship in San Francisco in the same way.
Wow.
The doors on her house are the same noise as the doors on the Enterprise. Another 2001. Whenever Timmy slips into the robot and begins, like, pulling chips.
Oh, yeah.
That's a reference to when, like, Hal is deactivated, like, and gets shut down.
Oh, gotcha.
The way Lula tells their parents what happened, it mimics how C-3PO told the Ewoks the story in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, that's so funny, because Lula, like, mimics sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, and that's really funny.
Yeah, and so, I mean, there's just so much. Like you mentioned, there's, like, homages to E.T., Doctor Who everywhere, Close Encounters. There are small things, too, where, like, the radar screen that the woman in black uses is, like, includes actual data display from, like, the Apollo missions to the moon. So there's, like, actual science nerd stuff in this movie everywhere.
Wow.
And that's one of my favorite things, is, like, you can tell they just really care about these movies and about this genre, that
the details.
And I think they even, there's another scene that is, like, almost a direct parody of a parody movie in one of our all-time favorite sci-fi movies, Galaxy Quest. Whenever they try to pull the spaceship out of the,
yes,
parking bay, they scrape it along the side.
Yes.
And in this movie, there's a nice long spaceship scraping along the side.
Well, yeah, when it's, like, scraping across the satellite, I kind of immediately was thinking, it reminded me of Galaxy Quest, but I wasn't sure if it was a reference.
I feel like it's a reference to that, or Star Trek. Like, I'm sure Star Trek did it first back in the show. But man, they're just sci-fi references everywhere,
yeah,
all through this movie. And there are references to other, like, Wallace and Gromit stuff, where there is a very, like, in the beginning of the movie, if you look on the TV, you can see a clip from the very first Wallace and Gromit short film, A Grand Day Out.
I definitely saw Wallace and Gromit on the TV.
Yeah, so that's the very first Wallace and Gromit short. And I think there's a couple more of those references kind of throughout.
Yeah.
Like the creator of Wallace and Gromit makes a cameo in the movie as like the bird hunter who's like,
oh my
kind
gosh.
Of looking. So like
amazing.
They're
amazing.
Yeah, it's just full of a lot of love and a lot of jokes.
It was really good. I really liked this. This was a great movie.
Yeah. It was fantastic. And I mean, we didn't even talk enough about like the actual Farmageddon tourist trap that it was so funny the way he watched all of the people walking up and then bumps the price up $10.
Yeah. As soon as everyone starts showing up, he changed the two into a three. And then as soon as everybody walks in and then sees how crappy everything is inside, he immediately starts nailing up a sign that says no refunds.
No refunds.
Yeah, the farmer is so great.
But I love how much, like, on the outside, it did look beautiful, like, and exciting. Whenever he plugged it in, all of the lights in town went off, which is a great gag, because that means everyone's gonna come.
Yeah.
But then, when they all get there, like, they actually do see aliens. Like, they got well worth
$30. Yeah, they really did.
And it's one of those things where it's like, is this highway robbery? Yeah. Is he like taking advantage of these people? Yeah. But like, is he doing it because the alien that they're seeing caused him to have to need money?
Yeah.
Also, yeah.
That's
it's like
true.
A big cyclical, like, everything ties itself in a bow at the end because the woman, like, in the big culmination, the climax, the woman in black sees the two aliens, the mom and dad, show up.
Yeah.
And it's the same one she saw when she was a little girl.
Yep, that was really good.
And
like, she hugged them.
Yeah.
And that was her...
just validation.
Yeah. It was good. Well,
yeah, it may not have been like as tear-jerkery as a moment as the first one, but that was a really emotional moment where maybe not as much as like the alien gets reunited with her parents. Great.
Yeah.
That has happened in these movies. But that, just to see the kind of validation of somebody who is doing bad, I guess, like, not evil, but
yeah, no, that was really good.
It was great.
I liked it. I really enjoyed this. I recommend it if you like comedy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you like animation, if you're looking for something to watch with kids, with your family, if you're looking to watch the things that have been nominated for the Academy Awards, watch this one. A lot of them this year are really downer movies. Like, there's some sad Academy Award movies.
It's
not
true.
This one. This nope. one is so fun.
This one will lift your spirits.
It's, yeah. It'll warm your soul.
Well, do you want to take a guess at guessing your British word?
Ooh, I do.
Okay. So I found a word from England.
Okay, as usual.
And I want to see if you can guess and see what it means.
Yes.
I'm curious.
You're being very coy. It's more so than normal.
Oh, no.
What's happening?
Nothing.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. Well, it's one of those things that I don't know if you're going to know it or not. Like, maybe
gotcha.
You know it.
I know every word.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The word is curb. K-E-R-B. What do you think that is in England?
This is terrible.
You seem really thrown off because usually the words I give you are longer, or it's like a phrase, like Cockney rhyming slang, and you have a lot to go off of.
This one I'm thrown off because I'm going to have to do an accent that, like, I don't want to sound offensive.
Okay.
But, so, like, a long time ago, the automobile was invented.
Okay.
And you know, in America, what we call it now.
What?
We call it a car.
Yes, okay.
But they don't call it that in England.
Oh.
Usually. But for a while, they were trying to figure out what to call automobile.
Okay.
And they had a lot of people, like a lot of people from Jamaica were in the way.
Yeah.
And they called it car. And people were like, that's a car then. And that's how it caught on. But then immediately it came back around where they're like, no, that's not posh enough. The Americans are using it now. They're calling it car. We can't do it. And so they took back and they're like, we're not doing car. So they invented it and then they backed away from it.
Okay, so you think that
curb,
K-E-R-B, means car.
Yeah, but it's just like,
care.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's Jamaican rhyming slang. But there's no rhyming. It's just Jamaican slang.
Okay.
So you're trying to trick me, and that's why I'm thrown, because I'm like, it's British, but it's not. It's like Jamaican British.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, interesting guess.
Yeah. History is tough. Like, it's written by the victors.
Weird. You're gonna be mad, but that's what they call a curb, like, on a street.
It's the same word.
I know, but what? It's a different spelling.
But then it's the same word. Color and color are spelled differently, and flavor and flavor.
I know, but it's so funny to me. I'm reading a novel right now that takes place in England, and the author is English, and they talked about going outside and sitting on the curb, and they spelled it K-E-R-B.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And I Googled it, because that's how they spell it in England, whereas in the U.S., we spell it C-U-R-B.
Words go through a lot of different variations and pronunciations.
It's just fascinating to me that we have a spelling that different from the same word.
Well, I mean, look at the. The used to be spelled Y-E. Like, ye isn't ye. Ye is the.
I know.
I mean, words change. I'm so frustrated right now. I was like getting all hopped up to guess a word that I already knew.
And I get, and I hope that you're not mad. I just thought it was so.
I'm less mad, but more like, that was my first thought is like, well, curb means curb, obviously. And it could mean either that curb or this curb.
I thought it was so interesting that I have never heard of that. You know, you'd think that in all of the British things we watch, or like having been to Britain, you know,
that's
like
a super common thing that British words are spelled differently than American.
Yeah, but like color or flavor, they have a U in them. This is like different letters,
like two letters.
It's
different.
Just I thought it was interesting, but maybe
I mean it is. It's definitely interesting. It's not. It's not where I thought you were gonna go with it. I'll say that.
Okay. Well, I had fun.
Well, of course you did. You got to taunt me.
Okay. Well, thank you for guessing it, and thank you everyone for listening to our episode of A Shaun the Sheep Movie Farmageddon. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook. I'm going to post a picture of our foam bananas and shrimps on Instagram and Facebook so you can see them there. You can also email us at anglophilespodcast@gmail.com anytime you have a show recommendation or anything like that. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Remember, keep calm and...
Rewind it. Sean, stay focused. Bye. No more being silly. Bye. Sean, I really mean it. Bye. I hope that means yes, not nah. Look at you all grown up. Lit, lit, lit. Oh, you glowed up. You're a star. Stay shining. In case you missed